Hi, everyone. Welcome to the horse.com special Life Stages live event brought to you by Merck Animal Health. I'm your host, Michelle Anderson, digital managing editor of thehorse.com. Tonight, we're talking about breeding stallions and mares. And we're joined by our expert, Dr. Bryant Craig, who's a professional services technical veterinarian with Merck Animal Health. Welcome, Dr. Craig.
Thanks, Michelle. Looking forward to a nice hour of discussion on brood mares and stallions.
Yeah, so you've done a couple of these events with us, but I know that this topic is close to your heart. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with breeding stock?
Sure. I spent the last 7 years of my practice was centered around breeding management, and specifically at a large breeding facility where we did 12 stallions and managed hundreds of mares and did a lot of advanced reproductive techniques as well. So, like you said, the topic is near and dear to my heart, and I've spent much of my career focused on that aspect of the industry.
Okay. So everyone listening, Dr. Craig is a great resource for this. So please send in your questions while we're talking live. We have questions that were submitted ahead of time during registration, and we're going to get started with those. But for anyone who wants to send in live questions, you can do so in your browser as you're listening. You can go ahead and type in your questions, send those in, and we will be reading and responding to those during the next hour. Let's go ahead and get started, Dr. Craig. Our first question is from Sally, and she is in Kansas City, Missouri, and she says she has a 23-year-old stallion who did not get any of his four pasture-bred mares in foal this past season. She wants to know what the chances are of his being able to settle them in the coming year. She says he's in good weight, but he's lost some teeth as he's gotten older.
Well, Sally, unfortunately, stallion fertility generally starts to decline when those guys are in their late teens, and then once they get in their 20s, we see a pretty rapid decline in their ability to settle mares. I guess the first thing I would do would be to contact your veterinarian and try to, if possible, collect some semen and do a full evaluation on that and see what his motility and his numbers look like. But at 23 years old, his best days are probably behind him, especially if he's in a pasture-bred situation.
So would it be unusual for a stallion who is out with four mares to not settle any of them, to have zero babies from that year?
I would be, you know, a lot more surprised if you told me it was a 15-year-old stallion. I would be really surprised if it was a 5-year-old stallion. But at 23 years old, that doesn't really surprise me. It would be more the norm. It would be an exception if he was settling mares at that age.
Okay. Our next question is from Donna in Virginia. And Donna has a senior mare who's 25 years old. And she said that she's been conceiving but had slipped a foal anywhere from 2 months to 8 months during her pregnancy. So slipping a foal would be losing the pregnancy for our audience members who aren't familiar with that term. Donna is looking for some tips on supplements or any other support that she can offer her to mare to help keep her in foal. What suggestions do you have for her?
Well, Donna, unfortunately, it's pretty common for an older mare to conceive and then have a subsequent abortion. Those older mares mares are born with all the eggs they're going to have. And so much like humans, as they get older, they tend to have chromosomal abnormalities or in the genetic material in those eggs. And so they're able to conceive, but because of the abnormalities there, the body's natural selection tends to abort those foals because there's something wrong with them. And there's just not a lot we can do to fix that. Mares are designed for a reproductive life between about 4 and 15 years of age. And once they get older than 15, conception goes down, much like the stallion, and we start to see a lot more problems.
So Donna was asking specifically about nutrition. Is it possibly a nutrition issue, or is it more likely that it has to do with the mayor's age?
It sounds like she's on a good plan of nutrition, and as long as that mayor's in a good body condition, there's not a whole lot we can do supplement-wise to change things, if, especially if we're dealing with a chromosomal abnormality. That's in the actual genetic material contained in that egg, and that's been formed many years ago at conception, basically, of this mare. So not much we can do to change that. They're just a factor of getting older.
Our next question is from Ellen in Connecticut, and her question is about a mare with equine metabolic syndrome. So I'm going to ask you first to explain to us a little bit about what equine metabolic syndrome is, and then address Ellen's question, which is whether or not it's safe to breed a mare who has EMS, or if there are any risks to her or her foal.
So first of all, to address the equine metabolic syndrome is just a series of events hormonally in horses that can cause them to gain weight and have some other issues as far as their immune system goes and other endocrine abnormalities. The risks for breeding a mare with metabolic syndrome, those horses are a lot more susceptible to abortion because of some of the immune changes they undergo and the hormonal changes as well. As we all know, pregnancy is a very complex set of hormonal changes, and the balance gets kind of flipped when they have the metabolic syndrome going on. So the first thing we'd want to do is try to get that mare under control with whatever problem she's having with her metabolic syndrome. If she's extremely overweight, we want to try to get that weight under control. Those mares are also very susceptible to laminitis, and pregnancy itself can exacerbate that. So we're looking at an increased risk of abortion and an increased risk of laminitis due to that mare's metabolic syndrome if she were to become pregnant. So that, I guess, the take home there would be I would want to get with your veterinarian and get her on the right plane of nutrition, and probably look at if there was anything medically we could do to help that metabolic syndrome before I even started thinking about breeding her.
So you mentioned laminitis, and that is often a concern in broodmares for broodmare owners. What can be done if a mare does become laminitic after she's in foal?
The speed of treatment is probably the most critical thing. As soon as we see any signs of laminitis, we want to get aggressive with our treatment. You know, if it's an acute case, which is most often the scenario when we're dealing with a broodmare, we want to try to treat those feet. Cold therapy is sometimes effective, and then get with the farrier and your veterinarian and devise a plan as far as foot care goes. And then we really want to watch the weight gain on those mares.
Okay. So our next question has to do with a mare that has Cushing's, which is another issue that can lead to laminitis. This is Melody in Kentucky, and she says, what are some of the best methods to help the fertility in a 19- or 20-year-old mare with Cushing's that's on Percend to manage that?
Well, to first kind of address the Percend, much like most of the other pharmaceuticals out there for horses, it hasn't been evaluated in pregnant mares. But according to the manufacturer, you know, Percend does have a chance of interfering with the reproductive hormones. It's a dopamine agonist, and so that's going to interfere with some of those hormonal cascades we're talking about in the pregnant mare. And with other metabolic syndromes, that Cushing's mare is also going to be susceptible to laminitis, as Michelle mentioned. But if we can get this mare under control, if she's under good control with the Percend and her Cushing signs have lessened or completely gone, she may start to resume a normal estrous cycle. We do have to watch those Cushing's mares. They can their immune system doesn't work quite as well either, so they're a lot more susceptible to uterine infection. So the first thing I would do is would be to get a complete breeding soundness exam done. I would want to culture and biopsy that uterus and determine if everything looks good there. But again, with a 20-year-old mare, we're kind of facing an uphill battle just with age. And when you put Cushing's on top of that, the odds are a lot lower than you would be dealing with a normal breeding age mare and one without the Cushing's.
Our next question has to do with stallions and age again. And this question came from Alice in Texas. And Alice wants to know how she can tell if her stallion is too old to breed. She said that her stallion is nearly 32 years old and he is a miniature horse.
Well, the nice thing about stallions versus mares is as the sex cells or the spermatozoa are continuously produced, so we don't have to worry as much about the chromosomal abnormalities. The gold standard for breeding soundness is still a pregnancy. So if he's physically able to breed the mares and able to settle them, then we obviously know he's still fertile. But prior to doing that, a good semen evaluation, looking at the motility of that semen and the morphology as well, your veterinarian can look at those two things and get a general idea of his fertility. And if more advanced testing is needed, that's certainly available as well.
We have a question from our live audience. Mike is in Louisville, and Mike says that you mentioned pasture breeding. If I wanted to pasture breed my mare, what's the safest way to set that up? Are there any advantages to this method?
Probably the biggest advantage to pasture breeding is, there's not much labor involved. We're just turning that mare out in the same paddock or pasture with the stallion. Some of the dangers to pasture breeding is we do tend to see some more injuries to the stallion and or the mare just because of the physical nature of the breeding. Another advantage we'd have is that stallion usually is going to breed that mare multiple times a day when they're in heat. So we get more covers with the pasture breeding situation, but we do have a little more danger as far as injury to either the mare or the stallion.
Okay. Our next question is from Mel in New York, and Mel says or wants to know, how does she discern whether her senior brood mare should be bred or not bred anymore?
Well, again, we've discussed a little bit before, the late teens tend to be kind of the twilight years for a brood mare, but we have some advanced technologies out there now that will allow that mare to continue her reproductive life on into their late teens and 20s, such as embryo transfer. It's purely an individual matter, though, as far as that mare goes. I've had mares in my practice that carry a live foal up to 23 years of age, but that's going to be more the exception than the rule. It really depends on that overall health and fertility of the mare, and how many foals she's carried before, and then the overall reproductive health of her as well.
Mel had a second question, and she additionally wanted to know, how old is too old to breed a mare for the first time?
Again, that can be kind of an individual matter. I tend to, if a mare is past about 14 or 15 years of age, would caution those mare owners that the significant risks are starting to become more apparent in that mare if she's never carried a foal. The uterus is basically a muscle that needs working out just like any other muscle. So if that uterus has laid dormant in that mare for, 15 or 16 years or even longer, then when we go and that starts to expand as the foal grows larger, we're looking at a larger risk for complications. And then the overall hormonal system isn't going to be as fine-tuned as those mares that have carried a foal every year, every other year up to that point in their life.
Okay. We have a question that came in from Michelle via email, and she says that she has a friend's pregnant mare that was just diagnosed with ring bone. She said, what anti-inflammatory meds can a mare have when she's in foal?
Well, again, much like the product we talked about earlier, there aren't any anti-inflammatories that have been approved for use in a pregnant mare due to the intricacies involved and the cost involved. Most pharmaceuticals that come to the market aren't going to have an approval for a pregnant mare. That being said, there's a lot of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories that are used in pregnant mares based on the recommendation of a veterinarian. So the biggest thing is going to be to have a consultation with your vet and determine what the appropriate pharmaceutical would be to use in that situation.
Our next question is from Diana in California, and she has a mare who's 18 years old, and she said that she's been experiencing a very strong sequence of heat cycles for the last few months. She said she's never had the mare be quite so affected by her heat cycles, and she said that the mare is showing an exaggerated behavior. She's blowing, she's winking, she's doesn't want to be touched or handled. She said that she's giving her a magnesium supplement, but that doesn't seem to have helped at all. What recommendations do you have for a mare who is not being bred but is showing significant heat signs?
Well, probably the first thing I would want to do there is do a thorough breeding soundness exam. Even though she's not being bred, she's still got those hormonal cascades going on in her body. Mares can develop tumors on their ovaries called a granulosa cell tumor that can cause this type of behavior. It causes an influx of hormones flowing in that mare's system. The other thing that can cause this type of behavior would be even a uterine infection. And although she's not being bred, uterine infections are still possible in the barren mare. I would also investigate maybe a urinary tract infection, a bladder infection. That can make a mare pretty irritable and show these, especially the winking and the strong heat cycles. And the last thing I would probably want to look at is if you've changed any feed sources, different hay, different pasture. Sometimes grasses can have high hormone content and cause this kind of behavior. Or look at any supplements that you might have changed that might contain something that's affected her hormone balance.
Do you see any differences in heat cycles frequently between the older mares and the younger mares? I have a three-year-old, and it seems like last year she wasn't quite as strong in her heat cycles, but now as she's getting older, I'm thinking more and more that I'm going to have to manage her as a performance mare. Is that typical for that to change over their life cycle?
Yeah, especially at that age, as a 3-year-old, she may not quite been reproductively mature, and as she's getting into that 4 and 5 and 6-year-old year, that's kind of the peak time for a mare, and so that hormone system is working at its best during those years, and so they're going to show a stronger heat cycle at that time.
We have a question from Sammy in California. Sammy has a 14-year-old quarter horse mare that's been lactating for more than 3 years. Sammy says that, as far as she knows, the mare has never been bred. She wants to know if there's anything she can do to clear this up. She said none of her local vets have any suggestions. The mare's teats seem to be warm, and she is uncomfortable when her teats are touched. This has not been the case previously, even though she's been lactating. What suggestions do you have, and what could be going on with this mare?
Well, again, probably the first thing I would look at, if a mare's been lactating for 3 years, I would want to look at your feed source and make sure you don't have a source of hormones there. Some times of year, some types of feed can cause an elevation in mare's hormonal balance, and I've seen mares start to lactate just due to that. The other thing that comes to mind would be a low-grade mastitis or infection in that mare, specifically in her udder. And if they get a low-grade infection, may not see any outward signs systemically, but that can cause a lactation-type event. So I would probably want to strip some of that milk that she's producing out and have that cultured and see if there may be a low-grade infection going on in there.
Okay. Our next question is from Debbie in Bellingham, Washington. Debbie wants to know what some recommendations you would have on keeping a senior stallion or mare comfortable if they're suffering from arthritis that seems to be affecting their breeding or pregnancy performance. We've talked a little bit about different anti-inflammatories for the ringbone question that came up earlier, but is there anything else that can be done to help manage our older breeding stock that have arthritis?
You know, one thing that I've found to be very important, especially in those older stallions that may be kept in a stall for a lot of the day and gotten out less frequently than the other horses, is a good exercise program. Arthritis tends to manifest itself when those horses aren't active. So I would want to make sure they're on a good daily exercise program with either turnout or hand walking, or, you know, if they're still able to be ridden for a time period every day or every other day. That seems to be a big relief for those horses. And again, I would consult with your veterinarian as far as using a non-steroidal in those situations where they deem it necessary.
We have a question that's come in from our live audience. Vaughn in Kentucky says that he used to work on a breeding farm, and post-breeding they would give the mares, or some of the mares, penicillin or gentamicin to prevent inflammation. And for other mares, they would do a uterine lavage. Is there one that's better than the other? What's the difference or your preference on those two different treatments after breeding?
Well, a post-breeding treatment is really common, and even more common in the central Kentucky area where most everything is done with live cover. We have a lot higher incidence of a breeding-induced inflammation when those mares are being bred live cover. And so that's where a lot of those practices come from. Depending on what the scenario is, either treatment can be appropriate. The post-breeding lavage sometimes will have antibiotic in it, sometimes it won't, depending on the need and the situation that arises. The post-breeding antibiotics are usually tailored specifically to that individual horse or set of horses.
Our next question is from Neela in Kentucky. Neela says that she has a mare that's 13 now. She's a thoroughbred who was in poor condition when she first got her. She said that the mare is much better off now, and she would like to breed her this next year. The mare will be 14, and if bred, will foal when she's 15. Neela says that the mare has exceptional breeding, and she plans on getting a breeding soundness exam done prior to having the mare covered. What are your thoughts on the age of this mare and breeding her?
If the mare's carried foals in the past and she's at an appropriate body condition, which we want them around between a 4 and a 6 on a scale of 10 there, and the breeding soundness exam shows everything to be appropriate, you know, we don't have a infection going on in that uterus, the uterine tissue appears to be healthy, the ovaries look good and active, then I wouldn't have much hesitation in breeding her. If those things don't all line up, then I would probably try to get any problems like that corrected before we got into the breeding season and tried to have her carry a foal.
Our next question is from Lois in California. Lois has a 28-year-old miniature stallion, and she said that he's recently produced a dwarf foal. She said that he's had numerous foals prior to this, and all have been normal, and no other dwarfs. She wants to know if genetics can be corrupted as the horse gets older, and she wants to compare that possibly to an older mother having a child with Down syndrome, or that probability of having a Down's child going up as a woman gets older. Is that possibly something that's correlated here, or is something else going on with her miniature stallion?
Well, sometimes, you know, we just have abnormalities occur. But with the stallion being 28 years old, I would probably question that his DNA material is being compromised for whatever reason. We can, however, do some evaluation on that to determine if that might be the cause. If you can have your veterinarian do a semen evaluation, they can send that off to a lab and do what's called a sperm chromatin structure assay, which I know is a long term. But what they're going to do there with that assay or test is they're going to look at the actual chromosomal structure in those sperm cells and determine if we have any abnormalities going on there. And that might give you an idea if that was just a one-time occurrence or if that stallion is going to be more predisposed to having affected foals.
Okay. We have a question from our live audience. Renee says that she has a well-bred mare that she's considering breeding, but that the mare has a few conformation flaws despite her excellent pedigree. She says that the mare is slightly over in the knee and has one slightly clubby foot. Is she going to pass those traits along to her offspring?
It's certainly possible. That's a great question. You know, there are those mares with those similar type of conformation faults that are bred to stallions and have flawless foals. I would certainly want to handpick that stallion, make sure that none of those flaws were present in his pedigree if I was going to proceed with the breeding.
So when you have had clients approach you about breeding their mares, what advice do you have when I hear it a lot, people saying, should I breed my mare, or asking my vet, should I breed my mare? What is your response as a vet who's done a lot of breeding?
Well, first of all, I'd kind of want them to understand the commitment you're talking about when you get into the broodmare business. You know, the gestation period is a long time. We're looking at 340 days of gestation, so we've got a long care period there. And then once the foal is born, we've got another extended period of care. Of the foal is going to be on the mare for from 4 to 6 months. And then, you know, depending on what your intended use for that foal is, you could have another 2 to 3 years of care for that horse before it goes on to do something else. So the commitment is probably the first thing I'd like to discuss. And then the other thing is to look at that breeding stock and make sure that they possess the traits you want to carry on, whether it be physical or maybe appearance wise or even ability. And if all those things line up, you're willing to take on the commitment, then I suggest to proceed on. But if not, if there's any question there, I'd want them to take a good hard look at it before they jump right in.
We have a question from our live audience. Elise says that she has a 14-hand mare she'd like to breed to a tall 16.2-hand stallion to produce a more average-sized horse. Are there any disadvantages to breeding a small mare to a big stallion? Now, I like Elise's question because my mare is small and she came from large horses and she hasn't grown. So I'm curious what you have to say about this, Dr. Craig.
Well, foal size at birth is generally going to be determined by the uterine environment. So if you got the small mare, there's a chance that stallion could cause the foal to be abnormally large, but generally she'll be able to handle being bred to that stallion. As far as the adult size of that horse, that's kind of a toss-up. You know, just like the mare you mentioned comes from breeding stock that's larger than her and she hasn't realized her size potential. We never know how those genetics are going to match up. So it's kind of a toss up in the air to see what happens.
Yeah. Part of the fun gamble of breeding horses.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what we got to be willing to take that risk. You never know what you're going to end up with.
No. I have no excuse. I bought mine as a two-year-old. I should have known she wasn't going to get any taller. Our next question is from Catherine in Australia. Catherine says that she's heard some different opinions about swabbing or culturing a mare before she's bred. She said one stallion owner told her that everything should get swabbed, even her own, every year before she let a stallion cover them. Another said that if the mare hasn't been served for more than 3 years or is a maiden, not to bother with it. Catherine says that she's considering putting her young stallion to a couple of her mares and is just concerned about venereal diseases. What are your recommendations for doing cultures on mares before breeding?
Well, first off, as far as maiden mares go, I'll tell you, I've had several instances in my practice time where I had a maiden mare come in that had a uterine infection. And so uterine infections aren't necessarily sexually transmitted. And I've had the same thing happen with mares that haven't been bred in several years. Once we go and do the breeding sinus exam, we'll determine that they've got a uterine infection and may not have had contact with a stallion or any breeding activity for several years. So I always think it's a good idea to do that breeding sinus exam that includes a culture and a cytology to determine what's going on in that urine environment. As far as, putting your young stallion to a couple of your mares, that would kind of be an individual choice there, but it never is a bad idea to get some diagnostics before we jump into that breeding period.
Our next question is from Rebecca in Nebraska. She says that she has heard that some mares will try to abort their foals. She says that she would like to know, how does this work and why does it happen? What information do you have about mares aborting their foals during pregnancy?
Well, Rebecca, unfortunately, abortion is a fact of life when dealing with brood mares. When I first started getting into a lot of reproductive work, a farm manager once told me that to never forget that mare is a four-letter word. And that kind of comes from the fact that they will frustrate you. Even when you've done everything just right, all the stars have lined up, they'll still abort a foal for unknown reasons. Some of the causes of abortion, probably the most common cause is going to be, out in the wild, is going to be twinning. Mares aren't capable of carrying two foals very often. You'll see reports of a mare delivering two live foals, but the odds are pretty astronomical. So most of the time they're carrying twins, they're going to abort that pregnancy. Another cause can be umbilical cord twisting. If that foal gets to rolling around in that uterine environment and the cord twists too much, it can cause an abortion. As we talked about earlier, those older mares, the chromosomal abnormalities in the eggs can occur and cause a malformed foal. If the mares determine that there's something wrong with that foal, generally they're going to abort that pregnancy. And then we can get into the infectious causes of abortion, which there's a couple of different viruses, rhinovirus, which I'm sure most everybody has read about and heard about, or herpes virus, as it's also called. Equine viral arteritis is another virus that can cause abortion. A mare can get a bacterial infection in that uterine environment, which can interrupt the integrity of the placenta and cause an abortion, and a fungal infection can do that as well. Fescue toxicity is another cause of abortion. So if there is fescue around, we want to make sure those brood mares are kept off of it and not use that fescue as a feed source. And then some of the metabolic conditions, as we talked about earlier, can cause abortion. So many, many causes. Unfortunately, a pretty common scenario in brood mares.
We have a question from our live audience. Josie wants to know about skipping a year between breedings on Brunemeyer. She said some people say that it's beneficial to skip a year. Is it true, or would you suggest doing that?
Skipping a year, that's a kind of a tough question. It depends on what our goal is for that broodmare. If we're very focused on having those foals early in the season, as in some performance disciplines, time of that foal birth is very critical, especially in racing, because we want that foal to be as old as it can be once they hit their yearling year. So a lot of times those mares, if they have a foal late, those managers are going to decide to skip a year in order to get that mare bred back early the next year. As far as physically goes, you know, if the mare has a good foaling, everything appears normal, the uterus heals up nicely, and she's cycling normally, I don't see a problem with breeding them back that same year. That said, I also don't see a problem with allowing them to skip if you want that mare to concentrate on raising the foal, not sending the mare away with the foal to a broodmare farm, or if you're breeding with ship semen, not having the hassle of trying to coordinate those kind of things with a wet mare or a mare with a foal at her side.
We have a question from our live audience. Lene is in California, and she's planning on breeding her mare, starting to have her covered in February. She wants to know when the right time is to start the mare under lights. So can you explain to us a little bit about why you would want to put a mare under lights, and then when would be a good time to start doing that if you're going to breed early in the season?
Sure. Brood mares they cycle depending on the length of day. So the natural breeding season for a mare is actually from April up until the early fall around September, because that's when we have the most hours of daylight. However, our breed associations do everything based on a calendar year, so our breeding season tends to start earlier in the year. So one strategy to try to get those foals born as close to January 1st as possible, which is what we're looking at with the February breeding, is to put those mares under lights, is what we call it. And that's exposing them to a photo period of light of 14 to 16 hours a day. So, like this time of year, where we don't have that 14 to 16 hours of daylight, we have to supplement it. And when we supplement it, we want enough light in that mare's environment. Kind of the general rule of thumb is you go to the darkest place that mare will be during the lighting period, and you want to be able to read a newspaper with that light. So that's one strategy, would be to expose the mare to at least 14 to 16 hours of light. Some of that's going to be natural daylight, and then the rest is going to be provided by a light source in that mare's environment. Another strategy that's come about is called pulse therapy, where we let the mare go dark at, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening, whenever natural sunset is, and then at about midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, we expose them to a bright light source for an hour, and then that light source goes off. And that's shown to be effective as well and a little more energy efficient. So that's kind of what we're talking about as far as light therapy goes. As far as the timing, you want to start right now. Generally, Thanksgiving is kind of an easy way to remember it, but we need to get that mare under lights about 90 days prior to our intended breeding time.
Our next question is from our live audience. Jason wants to know where the best place is to keep or house a breeding stallion on a property. Should the stallion be close to the mare? Should he be able to see the other horses? What are your recommendations for keeping him happy?
It kind of depends on the behavior of the stallion. In my years managing stallions, I've seen all different personality types. Some stallions, if they have mares in their environment, are worked up to a frenzy continuously, and so they need to be kept away from that broodmare band except at the time of breeding. So those stallions we'd house completely separate, where they couldn't even hear or smell a mare in order to keep them from working themselves into just a lather continuously. Other stallions with less libido, we would keep with what I would call a harem of mares, where maybe their paddock was surrounded by the broodmare band, where they could see and smell and hear those broodmares for most of the day. And that kept them aroused and raised their libido to where they were able to perform in the breeding shed. So it kind of runs the gamut. Some stallions need little exposure to mares in order to have good libido, while other stallions need continuous exposure to mares in order for their libido to be sufficient.
So, Dr. Craig, what recommendations do you have for maybe new or inexperienced stallion handlers or managers so that they can learn how to handle their stallions better or properly? Are there good places for them to go for information to get those skills?
I would look for a commercial breeding operation somewhere in your area. Those people that are doing it for a living have figured out the good ways and the bad ways, and you can learn a lot from them. And then as also a place that's busy like that, that's a commercial operation, you're going to get to see a lot of volume and a lot of different scenarios. As I said, you know, all these stallions are individuals and all have different personalities and different tricks. And so spending some time with the manager who has dealt with a lot of those different personalities and different horse types would be my first step before I jumped into the stallion business.
Our next question is a nutrition question. It's from Eve in San Diego, California. And Eve says that she has a 10-year-old thoroughbred stallion who will be collected this year for the first time in many years. She says currently he's being fed daily as follows: 20 pounds of alfalfa, 10 pounds of pasture mix, four-way hay, 2 to 3 pounds of equine senior, and 0.5 pound of beet pulp. All the hay is grown locally in San Diego, and he receives a five-way probiotic. What other supplements or hay would you recommend having him on to facilitate successful breeding?
Well, the main thing we want to make sure on these breeding animals is that they're just on a good balanced ration, which it sounds like you've got him on a good plane of nutrition there, and that they maintain a good body condition score. Stallions tend to lose weight during a breeding season just because they're focused on breeding and not on themselves. And so a lot of times, especially like some of those stallions I was speaking of before, they get frenzied when they're around mares. They'll spend most of their day pacing and worried about their broodmare band and not consuming what they need to maintain a body condition. So we want to make sure they stay on a good body condition score. There are some supplements out there, the omega-3 that contain omega-3 fatty acids that have shown an increase in the stallion's semen that's been frozen as the sort of a protectant there. And so those omega-3s, they may help somewhat with fertility. I don't know that we have a whole lot of proven science there, but certainly not going to hurt anything. Other than that, and one other suggestion I would have for you, if he's going to be collected for the first time in several years, I would do several collections, 2 to 3 at least, prior to actually breeding a mare. Those are what we call clean-out collections to try to get the newer sperm cells available when it does come time to breed that mare.
Our next question is from our live audience. Nancy in California wants to know if it's okay to deworm a mare that's in foal or after she's foaled and while lactating. If so, what kind of dewormers can she use safely?
Again, most of those products aren't going to be labeled for a pregnant mare, but it's common practice to deworm a mare prior to foaling or quickly after foaling. If we can deworm that mare quickly after the foaling period, sometimes we can lessen the foal heat scours. There's a specific parasite that occurs, and if we deworm them quickly after that foaling period, we can alleviate some of those symptoms.
We have a question from Charlene that came in via email. She said that she bought a young quarter horse stallion for breeding. She said, however, she's concerned that he might be a crypt orchid. She said one of his testes is visible and descended, and the other one is very small, but her vet can feel it when he palpates. The horse is 20 months old. She says that she's read that you can give them up to 3 years and maybe some hormone treatments to facilitate dropping the testicle. Is there any other treatment or precaution or methods that she could use to help him? Her final question is, if the horse has two testes and one is smaller, does that make him a crypt orchid?
Okay, we'll start with the first question. Generally, if both those testes aren't descended by the time of puberty of that stallion or colt, you're looking, you know, usually between 12 and 14 months for that time period. If both those testes aren't descended at that time, they're usually going to remain up in the abdomen. Hormone treatment, in my hands, has not been effective in causing the dissension of a retained testicle. So there are a lot of treatments out there talked about. I just haven't had or seen much success with them. As far as the cryptorchid goes, as long as both testes are descended, then they're not considered a cryptorchid. It doesn't really specify size. So if we've got one that's larger than the other, but they're both descended, then they're not going to be classified as a cryptorchid.
So what are the concerns with breeding a cryptorchid stallion?
Cryptorchid stallion is going to pass that trait on a lot more frequently than a non-cryptorchid stallion. So that's one reason some breed associations have a restriction on cryptorchids, is because they don't want that trait passed on throughout the breed.
We have a question that came in from our live audience. Ellen Catherine is in New Jersey, and she says she has five mares, ages 5 through 15. How can she keep them healthy from a reproductive organ point of view? So how can she facilitate their reproductive health?
The main thing, you know, like kind of what we've talked about earlier, is that body condition score, keeping them on a good plane of nutrition, making sure that they're healthy overall. A mare will kind of take care of their reproductive health if we take care of them. The other thing is going to be a breeding soundness exam on those open mares or maiden mares prior to breeding, and then a good exam on the mares once that foal has been born. You want to make sure that uterine environment didn't suffer any damage in that foaling process, and then make sure that placenta is released in a timely manner, and then follow up on that mare and make sure they're not retaining fluid in their uterus post-folding, and just have your veterinarian do an overall exam, you know, immediately post-folding, then maybe in another week, and then following them throughout that breeding cycle.
Our next question is from Roger in Idaho. Roger says that he has an Appaloosa mare that was diagnosed with kissing spines, and despite treatment, she's really not comfortable under saddle anymore. She was used as a brood mare before he purchased her, and her last owner said that she was a great mother. Would she be able to carry a foal to term with her kissing spines, or will this cause her pain?
What? Roger, that kind of depends on the severity of those kissing spines. I would say if the mare's comfortable out in pasture, then she would be probably comfortable carrying a foal. They are going to have more weight, obviously, carried on that frame while they're in foal, but it's a slow transition from not being pregnant, and that foal's not going to gain weight rapidly, so we're not going to see a tremendous strain put on the spine in a short period of time. But it's kind of going to be an individual assessment there. The other thing that I would throw out there would be, an embryo transfer would certainly be an option for that mare, for her to donate an embryo into a recipient mare where she didn't have to carry that foal to term. Would be a way for her to continue her reproductive life.
Our next question is from Allison in Washington. Allison wants to know, how far into gestation can you safely ride a mare?
As far as just riding a mare, well, I'll say this. I've had several mares in practice that have actually been in races up until their second trimester. There's a lot of performance horses that perform into their second trimester. But as we get into that late second trimester, and then especially into the third, I would probably try to avoid any exhaustive type of exercise. You know, if in that second trimester, if we want to just get on the mare and walk them around, have a nice, easy stroll, there's not a problem there. But we don't want to push them to the point of exhaustion to where we're maybe overworking her organs and causing that foal to possibly heat up or have any compromise there. But just normal exercise. The first trimester, they can handle a lot. The second trimester then is when we want to start being kind of cautious.
Are there any concerns if you are riding that mare and taking her places and exposing her to infectious disease? I know you mentioned rhino earlier as being a concern for breeding stock and abortion. Should a pregnant mare be traveling?
Well, that's a great question, and that is one thing I probably would limit. I wouldn't want them to go into environments that they haven't previously been exposed to, just because, as you said, the increased likelihood of encountering a rhinovirus or something of that nature that could cause an abortion or a problem in that pregnancy.
Our next question is from Sarah in Florida. She says researchers have shown that one herd of stallions can successfully be turned out together outside of the breeding season. Provided that there are no mares nearby, would it benefit stallions to be turned out with other horses, or do you think the risks outweigh potential benefits?
I would probably be very nervous about turning stallions out together if they were my own. Stallions by nature are trying to be the dominant horse, and so if you put a group of stallions together, they're going to fight until they establish a pecking order, and that generally doesn't last very long before the next fight occurs. They're continuously trying to be the A horse in that herd. I have seen stallions turn out successfully with pregnant mares. Those mares that aren't cycling, they tend to leave those mares alone, or the pregnant mares themselves will teach the stallion to leave them alone with some aggressive behavior. As far as other geldings go, I wouldn't recommend that either, as that stallion is going to really be dominant to those geldings, and the risk of injury is going to be pretty great. So it would have to be a pretty special situation for me to want to turn those stallions out with other horses, unless, you know, it's a pasture breeding type situation where that stallion's accustomed to being with other horses, or like I said, where you could put them in with a group of pregnant mares.
Our next question is from Jenny in Colorado. Jenny wants to know what are the best ways to ensure no diseases are transmitted from stallion to mare or vice versa during breeding, both AI and live cover? And what are the benefits and drawbacks of AI versus live cover?
Well, the first thing, the best ways to ensure we don't have any disease transmitted is we want to try to be as clean as possible. You know, we can't be sterile with the breeding environment. It's just, you know, we're dealing with biology and not really any way to be sterile with it, but we can be clean. And we want to make sure that we, as we've talked about before, we can culture and do a culture and cytology on those mares, make sure that uterine environment is healthy. As far as the stallion goes, we can culture and do a cytology on them as well through a semen collection and culture of those reproductive organs to make sure they're not carrying anything that may be of harm to themselves or to that broodmare band. And then when we get into the breeding process, is again very important to be clean there as well. We want to make sure that mare's tail is clean. A lot of farms you'll see they'll wrap the tail in to try to keep a clean environment, and then wash that perineal area of the mare to try to keep any manure or environmental contamination away during that breeding process. And then we also want to make sure that stallion is clean. And so if you go to like a commercial breeding operation, a lot of times before that stallion's allowed to breed a mare, they're going to wash that stallion with warm water and some cotton and clean the debris away. And so he's not inserting any of that type of contamination into the uterine environment. As far as AI and live cover goes, the artificial insemination is going to be safer for the stallion and the mare. We're keeping those two apart during that breeding event. Artificial insemination allows us to cover or breed more mares per collection or per breeding event. And then we can also ship that semen to other locations. You know, we can have a mare in a different state or even a different country and ship that semen. So it allows for some logistics to be taken care of that we can't with live cover. As far as live cover goes, you know, it's going to be generally less labor intensive. We don't have to have people to collect the semen, process it, inseminate the mare. The stallion's going to do all the work as far as that goes. So therefore, we're going to have less expense. And then some breed associations don't allow artificial insemination to try to protect the integrity of the breed. You know, you're looking at cover less mares in a live cover situation than you can in artificial insemination. So somewhat protection of the breed.
Dr. Craig, I had a broodmare who was bred. One time we had her live covered, and one time we had her bred AI. And she was one that was very quiet with her heat cycles. And even when teased at both of the facilities, she never showed to any of the stallions. One of the barn had 9 world champions, which I thought she was being very picky that she wasn't interested in any of those stallions when they were teasing her. What recommendations do you have for those mares who just aren't interested in stallions and getting them pregnant?
That's where your veterinarian is going to become very important. With the ultrasound technology we have now, we can determine that mare's heat cycle, even on those quiet mares that may be timid around those stallions. By doing an ultrasound examination of those ovaries and the uterus, we can pretty well pinpoint when ovulation is going to occur. So getting a veterinarian involved in the breeding management of those type of mares is very important.
We have a question from Randy in California. And Randy wants to know if broodmares and stallions require any special nutrition at any point during the breeding season. What are your recommendations, especially this time of year when we're gearing up?
Well, again, we want those horses to maintain a good plane of nutrition. The stallions, I probably want them to be maybe just a touch heavier than normal going into breeding season. So as we discussed before, they are going to lose weight during that breeding period. They're more worried about covering their mares, taking care of their harem, so to speak, than they are about their own nutrition. So the general tendency for a stallion is going to be to lose weight during that breeding period. And we may have to increase their concentrate or their grain portion of their ration during the most frantic time of that breeding season. The brood mares, as far as they're concerned, again, want them, you know, body condition score between 4 and 6. We don't want them too heavy. A mare that gets too heavy is going to be more prone to laminitis and generally don't cycle as well as a mare that's in a good body condition. And then those thin mares can be that way as well. We don't necessarily have the risk of laminitis, but sometimes they tend to not cycle quite as well as a mare that's in a proper state of nutrition. As far as special nutrition goes, just, you know, a good balanced ration is probably the most important thing. You know, if they have some special needs, we can find some supplementation to address that. But overall, I just like them to be in a really good plane of nutrition throughout that gestation or through that breeding period.
Okay. Well, we are just about out of time this evening. But before we close, I wanted to ask you to share with us what your one takeaway is for tonight. What would you like people listening to know before they head out and get ready to breed their horses?
I guess probably the biggest thing is as far as the small breeder or kind of backyard breeder is to realize the commitment that's involved when you're getting involved with stallions and brood mares. It's a whole different ball game than when we're dealing with our horses that we ride or we perform with. And to make sure you're well educated and you've got a good relationship with your veterinarian, they're going to be very important during that breeding period and the growth and development of that foal once foaling occurs as well.
Okay. I want to thank you, Dr. Craig, for joining us and answering these questions for the past hour. And I want to thank everyone who listened and also Merck Animal Health for sponsoring our Life Stages series this year. We are done with Life Stages. We've covered everything from foaling to senior horses and now our breeding horses. You can find those archived conversations on thehorse.com as well as some PDFs of articles that we've run in our print magazine about each life stage. All of that sponsored by Merck Animal Health. So thank you again, Dr. Craig, and thank you for everyone who's joined us.